conversations that matter to you.
We need proper representation.
Time for Fridays with Fry.
With Russell Fry on the Liz Callaway Show with Nick Summers on Talk 94.5.
It is 8:39 on the Liz Callaway Show with Nick Summers. Welcome to it, and welcome to Congressman Russell Fry. He's joining us live on the phone. Good morning, Russell.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. You know, Russell, we had a lot of questions about that big aid package vote. A lot of people were, you know, kvetching about all the money that is being sent to Ukraine and how that was a package. Can you explain, because we figured out that these were all individual packages. You voted in certain ways for certain ones. Explain what it is, because people were asking.
Yeah, so the bill, when it was originally passed in the Senate, was one package. So it was one vote, and it was Ukraine, Taiwan, some sanctions like Iran and some other stuff, and then Israel. And it was one big package. The price tag on it was, you know, close to $100 billion. To me, what frustrates me about Washington is that when you vote on something, there are things in there that might be great. And then there are things in there that might be bad. And they're like multiple subjects cobbled together, but for one vote. And so we've talked about, and you've heard, and your listeners have heard, we want single subject issues. That when you bring something to the floor, that it holds, sinks or swims on its own merit. I think that's important. I think the debate should be centered around the issue and not all these other sub-issues. And so the rule, every bill when it comes to the floor has a rule attached to it. And it's Republicans get an hour, Democrats get an hour to debate, you know, this many amendments. And this rule said that each subject will get its own vote. And if it passes or fails, if it passes, it'll be included in the final product and returned back to the Senate. And so for me, Ukraine, and I listened to my constituents, Ukraine's a non-starter, and it's not that you're pro-Russia. I actually hate that narrative because it's ridiculous. Russia invaded a sovereign country. That was a bad action by Russia. And you know what? We all, I think most of us, probably pull for Ukraine to win outright. But when we're sending this country that's not part of NATO, and they're not part of NATO partly because of their own corruption and things that, you know, you can't just apply to NATO and get in. There's certain things that, you know, there are certain things that you have to do within your own government. But one of the reasons why they're not in NATO is because they've had a long history of corruption within their government. And that's not everybody, but it's enough that it gives you pause. And when you have money that we've sent over there, up to this point, billions and billions of dollars, and there are people in Time Magazine and other sources that have admitted that there is rift going on, it makes you ask the question, well, how much of this is going on, and who's actually receiving the money? That's on the money side. And for the strategic side, Liz, I have to wonder, what does the strategic victory look like? Is it the return of the Crimea, which was taken in 2014? Is it the Donbas region? For the United States government, what do you think that a strategic victory looks like, President Biden? And up to this point, we don't know. We don't know because they won't tell us, and that's concerning. And so, look, this is a generous country. I understand the importance, and I think most people do, of being cognizant of what goes on around the world and trying to make sure, because these things, we've seen in World War II and others, you know, if we ignore it, it eventually winds up on our shores anyway. And so it's much more costly. So we have to have that strength on the world stage in a lot of ways. But what is the strategic advantage? And we're not getting that level of transparency. The American people are frustrated. And quite frankly, Liz, and most importantly, we got issues at home. And so while we appreciate what was going on in Ukraine, and I wish them success, there are things here. I mean, think about this. The $60 billion that we just sent them, that could have funded the state of South Carolina for years, like state government, for years, a whole state. Mm. And so you just have to wonder, and you get frustrated, because what I look at is a problem of a bigger problem, which is that the executive branch is incredibly powerful, and the Article I branch, Congress, has ceded control for years to the executive branch. And if we're going to claw that back, look, we don't need 435 commanders-in-chief, but you at least owe Congress and the American people an explanation on what does a victory look like? What is this money actually going to? What measures are you taking to ensure that grift doesn't happen? None of those have been done, and because of that, on every Ukraine amount of money and amendment that's ever been proposed, I voted against them.
So, just explain to us. So, you voted against the Ukraine funding, but you voted in favor of funding for Israel?
Correct.
And for Taiwan?
Correct.
And for the ban or sale of TikTok?
Yeah, that was part of that, and that was a weird, I wasn't like comfortable with that, but there was a there were sanctions for Iran and some other things in there that were, you know, strategically good. One of the problems that I have with the United States' Iranian strategy is that we have not held them to the standard that President Trump did. And if you look at the effects of the sanctions that President Trump levied on Iran, it really created their economy. And so if we're worried about them funding things like Hezbollah, which is a real big concern, bigger than Hamas, or we're worried about them funding Hamas, or we're worried about them pursuing a nuclear weapon, which is really strategically problematic for the whole region and the world, then the Biden administration's approach here is really problematic because they unfroze that money. If you remember the $6 billion that they mm-hmm. unfroze,
yeah.
They have softened their approach to Iran, like if we're nice to them, they'll be nice. Well, they're not nice to us. They target us all the time. They pay their proxies, like Hezbollah and the Houthis and Hamas, to target not only Jews in Israel, but our bases, our ships. And so why are we continuing to let them do this? I think some of these sanctions were mm-hmm. needed. And so that was a component of the bill that ultimately came out.
Yeah. You know, Congressman Russell Fry is who we're speaking with. We're getting a lot of texts, and so I'd like to, you know, kind of relay some of these messages.
Sure.
There, you know, a lot of people are concerned about the amount of money that we're sending. Why is it important to send money to even Israel? I mean, you know, or aid. What kind of aid are we sending there?
Well, it's mostly military. here's what we have. Look, Israel's a strategic partner. We share intelligence. We share information. We share objectives. If you look at some of the things that are going on in the Middle East, for instance, the Houthis attacking ships that are going through the Suez and other places, Israel intercepts a lot of those things, and they use that with weapons that they purchase from the United States. And so they're a strategic ally in a lot of ways, and they're our closest ally in the region. They're a democracy. They have done an incredible job, but you know, look, they have an Iron Dome. And of course, I just visited Israel. They have an Iron Dome, which intercepts a lot of the rockets that are fired into Israel. Those rockets cost money, and they have to replenish them. The concern that I have strategically for the country, look, we have a lot of American citizens that live over there, too, as dual citizens. And so if you look in the north where Hezbollah is five times more capable and powerful than Hamas is. And they've got rockets. They've got, in fact, in the northern part of Israel, they've evacuated 60,000 residents along the border because Hezbollah controls the southern part of Lebanon and Syria. And those two countries are so weak they can't expel them.
Mm-hmm.
But the concern that I have is just the sheer amount of rockets that they have. Look, Iran has funded Hezbollah to the tune of about $1 billion a year for years, and they purchase weapons and the like with it, and they point them at Israel. And they've used some of them just as a, hey, we're up here too, but they're not even close to extinguishing their capabilities. My concern is just the stability of the Middle East, and Israel is a very central component to that.
Speaking of Israel, what has been your take on what is happening at these universities that are now, I mean, it's spreading not only across our country, but also it's a spreading around the world. And during these, nobody is saying you don't have a right to protest, especially against a war action or, you know, innocent lives. We get that. But they are shouting things that are death to America, death to Israel, very anti-Semitic words and phrases and slurs are being used, and people who are of the Jewish faith are being stopped and terrorized into not attending classes. What is the real background, you know, that you guys are hearing in D.C. about what is happening? Is this just something that a speed bump we have to go through, or is this going to worsen as we go through summer? And will it explode at the DNC convention that's happening in Chicago?
Well, first of all, I think that these college kids at these Ivy Leagues, I mean, as hard as people had to work to get into these schools, it really defies logic that they would be so tone deaf and brain dead. I mean, they're like zombies right now. And, mm-hmm. and the things that they're saying, you know, from the river to the sea, that is about, that's genocide. I mean, that is genocide of an entire group of people. And so I don't understand it, because it doesn't, you know, I look at facts and I look at truth. And there are a lot of things that you might be critical on of Israel or whatever, but what you cannot say is that this is some sort of apartheid state, and that we should have a globalized intifada. I mean, that is insane, what is going on. And you know what's even crazier? Not is the message, but the fact that Jewish students are so, I mean, I've seen the video, we've all seen the videos, that they're locked into a library and can't leave, that they feel the pressure on college campuses to even identify themselves. And this is reminiscent of 1930s Germany, mm-hmm. where you have a whole sect of people that have been brought up to just, you know, they use, look at how bad they are. Look what they're doing, and it's not true. And that they're shouting these things like "river to the sea" and global invitata, and the schools are doing nothing, right? I mean, that is the frustrating part. Is I don't like these protests. I think they defy logic. I think they are ridiculous in what they're saying, and that they're pro Hamas, which hates the United States and wants to destroy us just as much. I think that's bad enough. But when you've got these schools that are complicit in it, I want to look at ways to rein them in. And one of those I think that I'm working on now is every school cannot have some sort of discriminatory practice. Mm-hmm. But if you're propping up these students at the expense of others, and others can't even go to graduation or class. Right. There are professors on some of these universities that have been are not allowed to come to campus that are Jewish, whose ID cards that are used to swipe in to get into doors and things have been deactivated.
Wow.
I think it is very time that you look at the IRS code, which talks about discriminatory practice, and there's Supreme Court precedent about this too, where they lose their tax-exempt status. I think the IRS needs to have a hard look at this for universities like Columbia and Harvard and NYU and all the places that they're propping this stuff up and that they're allowing to happen. Look, sometimes you can't control what people do, but these schools are turning a blind eye to the anti-Semitism on their campuses, and it's about time that the United States honor its commitment under the code that none of these schools can have a discriminatory practice. There would be so much outrage if you banned or had this on any other group of people, but somehow because it's Israel and Jews, you get away with it. And these Jewish students are so isolated on their campuses, they see what's going on. They're chastised relentlessly by these nitwits, and the schools are doing nothing.
So
you know what? It's time to lose your tax-exempt status.
I mean, this is really just a rhetorical question, but I feel like the same thing. I went through 9/11 and the feeling that I had of patriotism and the support we had for our police and firefighters and military. And then all of a sudden, I feel like there was a complete backlash against police and military. And I thought to myself, how did we get here? I didn't even see this happening. And now here we are. I never if you would have told me that this could actually happen in 2024, where we would be turned against people who are Jewish in our community, I mean, that is absolutely outrageous. And, you know, and I, you know, I have Jewish people in my family. My children are half Jewish. I just cannot even fathom what is being said and how it's being allowed to continue and not only continue, but grow. And more people are joining in. Like, just a commentary about society is why are these people joining this? This is the part I don't understand. I didn't understand why so many people hated police officers. Like, I just don't understand it.
Well, I think some of this, you know, some of this is a symptom of a larger problem of ourselves and who we are as a people. And I think that's why this election cycle is so important, is because it's going to send, you know, we either continue down this like slow drip of socialism, or we take the country back and we reestablish America's, you know, America's promise in the world. But here's the rub too, and this is these are funded activities. I call it Outrage Incorporated, because take an issue of the week, whatever it is. Today it's Hamas and Palestine.
Yeah, right. yesterday, I call it faux rage. That's what I call it.
Right, right. And it's so organized. It's not organic. You know, these protests aren't happening organically. They're happening with money behind them. And you have to wonder who is paying for this and why. And we know that it's leftist doctrine that is driving a lot of this. They're funding it, and they want this outrage. They want to
chaos.
Change, you know, the face of America. And so now they take a group of citizens, Jews, and they make them the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And they marginalize them, and they make them less than human.
Yeah.
The beauty of this country is we appreciate everybody for who they are as an individual. We respect the rights of the individual, but to see some of the things that are said on these college campuses and the signs that are being made, masks apparently are cool again. Maybe they're hiding their identity, or maybe they think COVID's going to outbreak, but masks all of a sudden are cool again, but no one wants to show their face. And I just think that is very telling about where we are and why people would go to these protests and support that when if you look at the history of what an intifada is, when you look at the history of what the river to the sea is, why would anybody with any degree of like common sense support something like that?
They don't even have common sense. That's why. Congressman Russell Fry, thank you so much for taking the time for us today. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Y'all have a wonderful weekend.
You too.